Hey y'all.
Welcome to NOLA HOTS, a podcast to raise awareness about congenital heart defects and discuss resources about CHD and some other stuff.
We're just two heart mamas from New Orleans doing this for heart mamas. Our dads, grandmas, aunts, friends, whoever may want to listen.
That's Susan Oakland.
And that's Lana Stevens. And we feel like we've got a lot to say.
Hey everybody.
It's the end of May, and you know what the end of May means.
End of school.
Thank the sweet baby Jesus. It's over. I have never wanted a school year to end.
Me either.
So much in my entire life. Not even COVID school did I want to end as much as I wanted this year.
Is it because we really had a full year this year? No, we had a full year last year too.
I feel like it was just not so much for Emily. I remember sixth grade being like Emily's hardest year in school, and that's what I just did with two kids.
Yep.
And I'm tired.
I agree with that.
And we had a lot this year. You know, my dad was in the hospital with COVID. I've been studying for work. Like, I feel like it was just busy.
Well, the beginning of the year with the hurricane was just like a crappy start.
And we started the school year with COVID. So all my kids missed the first 2 weeks of school, went to school for a few days. I had a hit. We didn't get back till the end of September.
I know.
Like, it was just a weird, rough.
I think it drew it out longer.
It sucked me dry.
Yes, I know. And I'm glad it's over. And we're also at the end of May, which if you haven't noticed by now, this month we've been highlighting moms, heart moms.
Yes.
Which I get it. That's what we do every episode because Susan and I are. But we tried to focus on
moms
just
sharing
moms
their stories
and moms sharing this summer. And we really had some great ones. And we're going to finish off with another good one.
Yeah. So I've met Alex through the PFAC board that we're on at Children's Hospital. And she's also a heart mom to Dylan. So, you know, I'm interested to see what she has to say, you know, and give us her perspective on all that. But
Before we get started, I want to remind everybody. Let's talk about some other stuff.
So coming up on June 4th.
This Saturday.
Right. Because today's the last Saturday. This Saturday, June 4th, Lana and I organized a heart parent meetup by the Café du Mont in City Park. Just, you know, we've had some moms say, I'd like to meet other people. Do y'all ever do anything? So we're going to try to see, you know, how many people show up and, you know, let everybody kind of try to meet other people. And
very casual. We'll be out there from 8:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Please don't feel like you have to be out there at 8:30 or stay till 10:30. We're going to be out there the entire time. Come and go as you please. We recommend bringing like a blanket or a folding chair.
Don't feel like you need to dress up because I'm sure it's going to be hot.
Yes.
As
everything
outside.
Yeah. So, but we will have, we'll be right by Café du Mont so people can get coffee or beignets, frozen or hot. And there'll be a bathroom close by. But we just thought it would be a good opportunity to meet other parents. And so, you know, let it be about you and for a minute.
Get a little break.
Yeah. Get a break from the kids and come, you know, dads or moms.
Or both.
It doesn't matter. I'm sure there'll be a few of moms out there, but I think Kevin probably is going to come too, mostly because he likes coffee and beignets.
Dwayne's working. I'm not sure he goes.
So,
he's not much to share, you know, but that's okay. Everybody handles it
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. So join us this Saturday. We hope people will come out there. Don't be afraid if you don't know anybody, because I promise you will get out there. You're going to be like, oh, wait, I do know this person because New Orleans is such a small city.
Yes. So true. So true. And then the other thing I wanted to mention is soon Henry and Harley will be back at Heart Camp.
Next week.
Camp Encore, which is a summer camp specifically just for kids with congenital heart defects. So if there are any parents out there that don't know about it, there may still be some openings. I'm not really sure, but we did do an episode on Camp Encore.
Yeah,
and they're
like
on Facebook.
One of our first
they're
few
on Instagram. They're on all that. And it's great. It's going to be right outside of Lafayette this year. It's for a week. They sleep away. They have doctors. They have nurses, therapists. They take great care of the kids. And it's, you know, Henry loves it. He's really gotten a lot out of it. Mm-hmm. So I highly, highly recommend it. Gives you a break and gives them a chance to be with kids that are like them.
Yeah.
You know, that have the same, not all the same, but at least all have some kind of heart issues.
Yeah,
so
they've
that,
all had
know,
some type
like
of intervention
the
on their heart. So it's definitely good for them. And I know that both of our kids have said for years that they loved it after the first year and couldn't wait to go back the following year. So definitely don't discount that. Look into it for your kids. Even if it's not this year, look into it moving forward. So,
So
that's our big news.
That's our big news for the month. And then without further ado, let's hear what Alex has to say.
Welcome to Alex Deshawn, who's a heart mom to Dylan. Thank you for joining us today, Alex.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about you and your family. I'm sure that there's a long, you know, there's probably not a little bit. None of us have a little bit to tell. So tell us what you want to share with us about you.
Yeah, how we can sum this up. So my husband and I, both essentially from the North Shore, we both moved here around elementary, middle school ages. So we say we're from here. And we knew each other all through school. We actually graduated together, but we didn't start dating till college. And, got married about a year and a half after I graduated. And, shortly after that started our family, and, our heart son Dylan is our first baby.
Okay.
So yes, we've been on the North Shore. Yeah, we've been married. It'll be 13 years and I guess about 2 weeks coming up on our anniversary. So yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about Dylan.
So yeah, Dylan, we were young, ripe 24-year-olds when we found out I was pregnant right before our first wedding anniversary. Actually, we found out we were pregnant, and it was a normal, easy pregnancy. We went to our 18-week ultrasound. We wanted to find out the gender since he was our first, and went on a family vacation with both sets of parents, found out we were having a boy. Everybody was ecstatic. And I get a phone call, I guess about a week later, saying, we want you to come back. We think maybe the position just wasn't quite right. There's a few measurements we didn't get. So just come back. Let's wait till you're about 22 weeks. Let him grow a little bit more, change positions, and we'll do another ultrasound. So we actually went to St. Thomas with my parents, had a nice little vacation, had, you know, no idea anything was going on.
Little did you know that was probably necessary, huh?
Well, right. Yeah. I mean, why would something be wrong?
Right.
You know, we have no family history, nothing like that. So we go back, and I didn't even see my doctor that day. We just saw the ultrasound tech. And again, probably about 2 or 3 days later, I get a phone call at work, and it was actually my doctor, and just said, look, we're still having some trouble getting some measurements of his heart. So we're not quite sure what we're dealing with, but we want to set you up with an MFM just to, you know, get a little bit more clear pictures and see what's going on. So it was about another week or two before we saw Dr. St. Amant. He was actually out of Women's Hospital in Baton Rouge, but he would do clinic at St. Tammany here in Mandeville and Covington. So my husband and I both went to that appointment, and the ultrasound tech, you know, probably a good, I don't even know how long it was. Felt like a really long time.
It felt like years.
It felt like 3 years. It was 10
always.
Minutes, probably.
And we have no idea, you know, what we're dealing with. And he comes in the room and he looks at the screen for a couple minutes. He does a few, you know, scans himself, and he just puts his hand on my leg and says, we're at the actual hospital. He's like, I'm going to go find us a place where we can talk.
Oh, and no, that's not a conversation.
Yeah, what the look on my face was, but my husband and I just looked at each other, instant tears. So we actually, the only available room was a delivery room at the time. So that's where we had to go sit down and talk. And he tells us that, you know, it looks like, you know, from what he's seeing, the baby, you know, they can't find the left chamber. So his, you know, is hypoplastic left heart syndrome, but he's like, look, you guys, you seem like a really young, sweet couple. I'm not sending you home with this to dwell on this. One of my best friends is a pediatric cardiologist. Let me give him a call and see when he can see you. Thankfully, he could see us that afternoon. So we called both of our moms, got them in the car. All four of us drove to Baton Rouge. Dr. Hickson, who is still our cardiologist to this day, we went to his office, and again, another, you know, long fetal echo. And he just, you know, confirmed that diagnosis that, you know, our baby was missing an entire ventricle of his heart. And he kind of gave us, you know, the realm of statistics of it could be really bad. It could be this. You're definitely going to need some surgical intervention required. These are the hospitals that I would recommend. And just kind of gave us the freedom to figure out where we wanted those surgeries to take place. So, you know, it was Boston, it was Texas Children's, and then Children's New Orleans were kind of, and then Philadelphia, I think too, was when we talked about. So we just kind of took a couple weeks to process, and of course, tried to stay off of Google. They always tell you that, but
it's the world.
You don't do that. You look it up. And ultimately we decided that Children's Hospital, you know, we have this hospital in our backyard. And Dylan was in January. And I didn't want to have to go to Boston or go to Philadelphia in the middle of Christmas and winter and be away from our families. And I think Boston actually had a really bad snowstorm that January. So I was thankful we kind of avoided that. And then one of the biggest things that we had learned through the little bit of research that we did was heart kids can have a lot of other complications and issues and probably going to need more specialists than just a cardiologist. And so for us, knowing that we had such a big children's hospital here, it just made sense that if I needed other specialists, we wouldn't have to be bouncing around all over the country. So that was ultimately our biggest reason to stay and go to Children's. So Dylan was, I was actually born in Baton Rouge at Women's Hospital because Dr. Zane Amont followed me through my pregnancy to MFM. Had the whole neonatal team there, induced me at 39 weeks. It was a very long delivery. He was not ready to come, but he was born in the middle of the night and just the most beautiful, pink and screaming, healthy, chubby baby you've ever seen. Children's came and got him the next day and transported me. He was supposed to be they had just gotten Abby, the new helicopter. And so they had wanted to send, and he'd be the first patient they transported that day, but I think there was really bad rain and weather. And so they just kind of got nervous. So they sent an ambulance, transported him to Children's. And then thankfully I was healthy enough to be discharged and followed him, to Children's and admit him to the NICU. And then the whole surgical process, you know, started from there. I think we were in the NICU for about 16 days. They, drew us a nice little sketch on the board. Dr. Turner was the cardiologist on that day.
Here we go back to our artist. They love art project.
And I've heard y'all say this numerous times. The husbands always get it. The husbands always get it. So he draws this elaborate sketch of Dylan's anatomy.
I still don't understand it.
Me either.
Yeah, no, I know. And it actually, his diagnosis changed a little bit. So just fetal echoes are so complicated, and obviously their hearts are so tiny. So we had a little bit of a blessing in disguise. He was actually hypoplastic right heart syndrome, which is a little bit less common in the scheme of single ventricle. So I think that's why they initially just went to left heart diagnosis in the beginning. But the left side is more of the workhorse. So for us, that was a little bit of our miracle that, okay, he at least got the stronger of the two ventricles. But he had four other CHDs. So he's hypoplastic right heart, bilateral superior vena cavas, transposition of the great arteries. He had a coarctation of his aorta and dextrocardia. So his heart was facing the opposite way, which is probably the HLHS and the RA, you know, why they had
that kind of got heart crossed over.
Switched. So we knew his first surgery, the Norwood, was going to be a little bit tricky because of such a unique anatomy that he had.
I'm trying to envision that drawing.
Yeah, that's like
the transposition drawing threw me off. You got to add in some hypoplastic and all of
that.
Right. He waited about 16 days before surgery. He had to be intubated, I think, about 3 days prior, but he did pretty well. I think there was a few urgent cases that they had to take before him, which is probably why we waited till that 16 day mark. But his first surgery, the Norwood procedure, where he had a VT shunt placed, was the longest day. They took him back probably 7 a.m. that morning, and we did not see him in the CICU till about 8 p.m. that night. Uh-huh. I still to this day cannot wrap my head around how Dr. Cassidy and Dr. Pettit did, you know, were in there all day long, and all the other staff and nurses that, I mean, these people are machines that, you know, stand over these little tiny babies for that long. But they had a lot of trouble getting him off of bypass. And so they ended up having to put him on ECMO, which I'll never forget Dr. Cassidy coming out late that night and telling us, you know, he's made it. The surgery was successful, but we, you know, had this trouble. So we put him on this machine, and I remember my dad looking at me with just tears in his eyes, and he's like, he made it. And I remember saying, this isn't good. Like, something's not right, because those dang, the forms that you have to sign before surgery, and there's this big white space for complications. and it was ECMO and death were the two things on there. So, and I always make my husband, those were his, that's his job. He has always to this day signed any consent forms. Like, I'll do all the appointments and everything else, but you have to sign the consent. But I just had that visualization and I'm like, this isn't good. Like that was, you know, those were the two worst case outcomes and we have one of them. So, you know, you never, those images of him, you know, open chest, ECMO, all these wires. And one of my best friends actually came to visit us in the CICU while, you know, during that time frame. And I mean, she walked in the room and literally fell up against the wall and just slid to the ground. She just,
It's hard to watch.
Yeah, you don't expect, to come see this little newborn in that way. But he was on ECMO. That was a Thursday. He was on ECMO on Sunday. They took him back to the operating room. I think they decided his shunt was a little too big. It was allowing too much flow. So they did a revision of the shunt. And thankfully that was able to get him off of the pump through that. He was still open chest for a couple more days. So I think it's about a week total that he was open. So that was another procedure, going in and closing the chest at his bedside. And he had kind of a rough go with recovery. We were intubated for a long time. I think we had two failed attempts before his successful extubation. And then a lot of, you know, OT with bottle feeding, and he required a lot of oxygen support. And he actually ended up coming home on oxygen at about just shy of 3 months old.
Oh, wow.
And we actually came home. They discharged us on a Friday, and Dr. Cassidy had us come back that next Saturday morning. He's like, I need to see this baby and just make sure he's okay through the night at home. And that's kind of when we decided we really needed the oxygen support. So he was on oxygen. And so we went back for his Glenn in May of that year. So he was right at 5 months old. Really smooth surgery for his Glenn. It was a little bit on the longer side of an OR time still, but probably about half of what his Norwood was.
There's so much room for error that it's just,
I know.
I mean, I have to ask a dumb question. When did they fix the transposition, or have we just not gotten there?
Well, I really don't.
She's like, I don't know what time they did. Well, because you talked about the first surgery. And I mean, the first surgery was similar. They took him back between 6 and 7 a.m. And we didn't see him until between 8 and 9. It was like a 13-hour
ordeal. And he was open chest.
And he was open chest. She's talking about the Norwood. She's talking about the Glenn. But I'm like, where did they fix that?
It must have been all intertwined within that. That would be a question I would honestly still need to ask the doctor.
For her. She's like, he came out.
I mean, look, I compartmentalize and I forget things. So, I mean,
right.
I was just.
Well, see, and you said like, and sometimes it's hard for me to even, because that's just all encompassing of Dylan. Like all of that is just his anatomy. So sometimes I forget those are individual CHDs for other kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But no, that was just one surgery in itself for Henry, you know? So I really, my husband might be able to tell you, because he's, you know, understands the whole plumbing aspect.
Yeah. I was like, I'm glad you get it, because I don't get it. I don't know what's happening here. It takes a while.
We're all postpartum and in the midst of all these other things too. Yeah. So it's just like, you're just going through the motions of, is my baby okay? What do I need to do? So you're still the patient trying to take care of yourself. I was still trying to pump through all of that for a little while. So yeah, so that's a good, that's something I'm going to have to figure out. But
I didn't mean to ruin your story. I forgot.
Okay, so 5 months he has another procedure.
Yes. So he had his Glenn, and that was a fairly smooth, but he did end up coming home on oxygen. And I think I remember them telling me he was one of, if not the first baby to actually go home on oxygen after the Glenn. So that was kind of a letdown. We were expecting to be done with that. But thankfully, you know, I was on a personal leave from work, and I think I was home for the full first 6 months for him, and we had weaned him off of the oxygen before I went back to work. So probably about another month or so after Glenn, we were able to kind of wean from home and get him, you know, fully on room air. And I mean, he was such a happy baby. He was such an easy baby. You know, thankfully feeding went really well for him. But around 7-8 months old, I had those little bumbo chairs where you just sit them on the counter. And we were starting to do, soft foods. And there was one day he just kept kind of like jerking off to the side. And so at first I just thought he was like feeling the space around him and just kind of exploring what he could do in the chair. But then it seemed super consistent with the movement he was doing. So we made an appointment with our pediatrician, and I was able to actually catch a few of these on film, these little jerks that he was doing, to show her at the appointment. And she knew right away he's having seizures. These are infantile spasms. He's having seizures. She called Children's. We were in with neuro the very next day and did a full sedated MRI. And we found out his majority of his right hemisphere of his brain, he had had a massive stroke at some point. We don't really know when. We can assume maybe between any of those extensive surgeries or ECMO, the high probability that's when it happened, but there's no way of ever knowing an exact pinpoint. So got in with neurology, started, trying some different medicines, finally found, I think it was our third one, epileptic medication. And he's still on a realm of all these, post-op medicines for his heart. And so that was probably about a year and a half process of just monitoring. He kind of grew out of the seizures, thankfully. And as soon as we got him off of those epileptic medicines at about 2, he really started hitting his milestones. I mean, he didn't walk till just shy of 3. Thankfully, we have early steps here, in Louisiana. So we had a lot of OT, PT, speech, early education. And, we had a walker, we had braces, we had the whole 9 yards to try and get him going. But once he hit about 3, he was really starting to catch up with all of his developmental milestones. Then his Fontan came up, he was 4.5. So that was July of 2014, for his Fontan procedure. And again, he did really, really well with that. There was, probably a little over a week we were admitted for that one. So that was our shortest stay for any open heart. And we had a nice long stretch. He was doing amazing. Went to kindergarten, first grade. And just at the end of his first grade year, he started having seizures again. And I think what I've learned, honestly, from listening to you guys, one of your episodes with the behavioral doctor talking about the anesthesia and like that 7-year gap, went from when the body's had that major, it makes sense to me now. I didn't understand at the time why all of a sudden he started having seizures again when he had been neurologically so healthy. We were totally discharged, not even seeing a neurologist anymore. I mean, he was cleared. So I kind of think that might've been what happened. Something triggered in his body, a little prepubescent maybe too. Started having seizures again. So got back on the medicine, epileptic medication. And with his Fontan, they had placed, or created a fenestration. So they basically created a hole in his heart to allow as an extra release or cap off if he ever had too much built up pressure, with the intent that it would eventually close on its own. Well, it never did. So, all our cardiac appointments, follow-ups, that little hole was still there. So when these neurological things kind of started happening again, we got a little nervous. He's at a greater risk. He's already had one major stroke. That's just another direct passageway, for anything to get in and lodge, So in 2019, we had a cath, November of 2019, to go in and close that fenestration. And it was kind of a perfect storm of events. He created this giant hematoma at the access site for that cath. So we had to stop his blood thinners for a little while to allow that to heal. Well, simultaneously, he had just had this metal device implanted to close this hole. Plus they did some coiling to close off some collaterals in his heart. So there probably was some buildup happening there in that, window of being off of his blood thinners. We got clearance from everybody. We had this trip to Disney planned. He was okay to go. Our first morning in Disney, we're brushing our teeth, getting ready to go to the parks. And he just walks up to me and he just kind of like collapses into himself and into me. And so we sit him on the bed and we're okay, drink your water. Can you do this? And he's looking at us like, I can't do what you're asking me to do. He couldn't figure out how to get the bottle to his mouth. Didn't really have the traditional droopiness or, you know, stroke signs, but we just knew he's having another stroke. And so my husband grabs my father-in-law's keys and is like, let's go, we're going to the truck. I'm like, dang, we are in Florida. Like, we don't know where we're going. Like, we have to get an ambulance. And so we just scooped him up. Thankfully, we had an adjoining room with my parents, and his parents were next door. So, because at this time, we now have two other small children. I've totally skipped over them.
That's okay. We noticed them too.
So, yeah. It's really good at this point that we're 2 and 3 at the time.
Wow.
And so we're like, okay, y'all stay with Ryan and Camille. And we jet out into the parking lot, meet a staff member, tell her what's going on. She calls an ambulance. We had, thankfully, an amazing EMT that I wish to this day that I could find him. Because I think that typically because of a stroke, they were going to send us to Arnold Palmer. But he was listening to me download him on his cardiac history and said, no, you need to go to Advent Health. You know, they have the best CICU. They're going to know what to do with your kids. So it was further away, but that's where we went. So we were admitted in Florida for a week at Advent Health in Orlando. And I can seeing everything with his heart and the, you know, the recovering from the open heart surgeries and those first 3 or 4 days in Florida, I can honestly say were the worst days of my life. I thought we were losing him in some way, shape or form, whether he was going to be immobile, whether he wasn't going to make it, whether he wasn't going to ever talk again. I just, that those were worse than any of the cardiac stuff that we had to do. But, you know, as resilient as kids are, he, you know, by that like 5th day, his speech was coming back. He was, you know, kind of moving around a little more. He lost a lot of core strength. But it was obviously a second stroke. And this time it was on his left side, left hemisphere, but it was a lot more minor. We don't really think there's, you know, damage the way the right hemisphere was damaged. So he, you know, he missed a good chunk of his second grade year, and then COVID hit. So then he was really out of school for the rest of his second grade year.
That word will never go away, will it?
I know. It was such a perfect storm of just one thing after another. But in the end, I mean, I just got that much more one-on-one time with him to help him recover. But so then, you know, fast forward to today, and he, you know, he still has a lot of left-sided weakness. He, you know, very much a toe walker on that left side. Really can't do anything fine motor with his left hand. His speech is now more impacted from that second stroke than before. You almost really didn't even know anything other than a little bit of left-sided weakness before that second stroke. And I think we've finally got his seizures under control. We're still on, now we're down to 1 epileptic medication. But, you know, all in all, he's doing really, really well now. He's
a good dancer.
Oh yeah. You've seen him. Yeah. He loves music. He loves sports. He just finished his 4th grade year. He's got an amazing peer group that really wants to take care of him and help him at school. And, you know, just now that we've been able to get back into the schools this year, I've been able to see that finally firsthand.
Where does he go to school?
He's at Lake Harbor Middle. So he's in, one of the public schools over here. We have a great school district where we live. And, you know, he's got amazing therapists and teachers that have always, you know, come out to different events to support him. And, I mean, he's the happiest kid. I mean, he really is. Because of that second stroke, you know, we got in with hematology and new neurology and the doctors in Florida, and every single time somebody would walk into the room, they're reading his chart, you know, trying to catch up and get a little summary before they walk in. And every single time they walk in and they see him, they're like, wait a minute, are you sure? Like, you're this kid, you know, you read this history and when you see him, it doesn't seem to match up. You know, because he's just this happy, healthy looking kid. And thank God his cardiac health has been very, very strong throughout all of this. I mean, that's really our day to day is not so much CHD. It's the neurological stuff. It's his biggest struggles and his day to day challenges for sure.
Yeah. So. Well, Alex, I know that you and Susan are familiar with each other from before, and we're just meeting now.
Yes.
Understand that you do some work with Children's Hospital. Can you tell us a little bit about your role with the PFAC?
Yeah. So we got, I guess it's been about 2 years now because we started, or maybe a little bit longer. We started just before COVID and everything.
Yeah, I feel like it was like one or two in person, and then it was, I haven't seen anybody since.
Yeah. I think it was right that November when Dylan was having that last cast. That's when we had our first in-person meeting.
And PFAC stands for, remind me.
Wait, say again.
What does it stand for, PFAC?
Oh, Patient Family Advocacy Committee.
Okay.
So they've had one for the full hospital, for, you know, for all the children's for a while. In the Heart Center, they wanted to start. We're the first specialty committee for just one unit, I guess, so to speak. So Children's was in the middle of this huge renovation and remodeling. And with the new, you know, building this new cardiac intensive care unit, they really wanted to get the family input from those from, you know, like Susan and I from, you know, over a decade ago. And then we have some families that, you know, have toddlers and babies. Yeah. So you get all of these different perspectives. So my favorite part is that it's families, but it's also nursing staff, it's cardiologists, the surgeons, you know, are a part of it sometimes, the cardiac intensivists and social work. So it's really a nice, well-rounded group. And we talk about the good and the bad, whether it's, you know, the positive feedback, the negative feedback, things that we think that, you know, we need and that's important to families when we're admitted. You know, just recently I had a former heart mom that I only know her through social media, but they had just gone and had a surgery there. And this was her first time at Children's. So, you know, I reached out to her, hey, how did it go? Tell me all, you know, good, bad, we're open to everything. So we can bring that information back and just continue to help the hospital, you know, serve its patients and to the best of the ability. So
that's great. It's a great way to give back to, you know, the hospital that's done for you as well.
Yeah, I always tell people, you know, if you don't tell people about your experience, good or bad, but I always say, especially bad, they can't improve and make things better and fix it.
You know, you 100%.
You know, that was broken. And so, you know, I think it's very good when people give that feedback. Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you, Alex, one of the questions we always ask everybody on the podcast, and if you listen regularly, you'll know is, we always ask everybody if you have one piece of advice to give other people listening, especially, you know, new heart parents, what would it be?
Such a loaded question. And I've thought about this because I've heard you guys ask it before, but I mean, there's so many different aspects to it, but I think one of the first things is, or what we realized really early on is people are good. Like people want to help you. They want to do anything. I mean, and now we have all the, you know, social media and GoFundMes and all of these things, but I mean, people just want to help and you have to be open to accepting that help because I know for us, we could not have come this far by ourselves, by no means. It's our family, it's our friends, you know, and you have to have this, whether it's other heart moms, whatever, you know, it is people want to help. And for me too, you have to, as a heart mom, prioritize yourself because I think it's very easy to get bogged down. It's very easy to, you know, have this why me and why my kid and, you know, I didn't do anything wrong. I was so healthy, you know, whatever. And so I think it's very important to find that time to take care of yourself and whatever that outlet is. You know, I have a group of friends. We get together one night a month for a little, you know, game night, bikini night, whatever. And that's like my therapy, you know, I got to get out. I got to spend time with my friends, feel normal, you know, and just, you know, be able to escape sometimes that sick kid. You know, I could have a 2-hour IEP and then we'll have a cardiology appointment and we have hematology, you know, you have all these things. So it's nice, you know, you have to just be able to be focused on you. Yeah. And be able to be a better parent for your kid, you know, by doing that, because, you know, it can get really scary sometimes. It can get really dark, but yeah. And I mean, one of the things for me, and going back to the PFAC, that has been such a full circle moment, is I remember there was one little baby that came in, during our first day. It was right after his Norwood, and she was probably about 2 or 3 years old, this little toddler, crazy curly hair. And one of the nurses came up and said, she has the same, you know, her heart is very similar to Dylan's. Look how good she's doing. Look how, you know, it's like, okay. So that was my mental image. Like, there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes.
You know, he is going to be smiling and happy just like she is. And now her mom sits on the PFAC, you know, with us, and I get to see her, you know, she's, I think, 16, 17 years old now, super sassy and sweet, you know, outgoing kid. And so you know, finding those other heart families that you can connect with to see, like, it's going to be okay. You know, there's other sides to this. It's not always going to be, you know, you're not going to always be stuck in a doctor's office. Yeah. You're going to get past it.
Well, I like that piece of advice. And I think that we all have more recently, since we started the podcast, have made that a priority for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I feel like you kind of, well, at least me, I always put myself on the back burner, you know, like,
it's hard,
family, my job, this, that, yeah. You know, and then you like sit back and take a look and you're like, you're not looking good. Gotta put a little
time into me. Right. You know? So, but it's good. But every time we do, we always feel refreshed, and that's a great piece of advice. So thank you for sharing. And thank you for sharing Dylan with us and his story, your journey with it. So,
Thank you.
We'll be meeting in person very soon.
Yes. Thanks for sharing with us today.
Well, thank you, Alex, for sharing your story. It was really an interesting month of hearing from so many different moms in different aspects.
I know. And, you know, so I've known her, you know, as we said, through the PFAC board, but I didn't realize how much he had been through, you know?
Yeah. And like she pointed out, you know, his cardiac was almost even
a secondary deal. And I mean, not that obviously it was by far the least of her concerns at the time, but I was thinking to myself, I know how much planning goes into a Disney trip, and you didn't even make it through one day.
That crossed my mind,
damn.
Too. And I really wanted to ask her, like, did the grandparents take the little ones?
Yeah, what happened? But I felt like that wasn't important.
I feel like it wasn't important to the interview either, but I bet everybody else is wondering, too, like, what happened to the rest of their Disney trip? I don't know.
Do you get a refund? Do they feel bad for you? I mean.
Well, my thoughts are.
They don't. They don't.
No, they don't. They don't do that. They don't give you a refund. But my thoughts are, it sounds like they have a really great support system with both sets of parents, and that maybe, you know, there was some of that availability for the other kids.
For
thankfully, because I mean, I'm thinking if I'm there with just my husband and kids, we're screwed.
Well, then you think about all the people who have to travel to New Orleans or some other city and have kids and don't have that support
brings
system.
Brings you right back to that. So anyway, again, it was a great month of highlighting moms. We have some amazing moms out there, and we just keep learning that every time we interview a new one. So.
For
it's
sure.
Been nice to be able to do that. So a reminder about our meetup this weekend. Don't forget, we will be at City Park between 8:30 and 10:30 a.m. Near Cafe Du Monde. And it's kind of bring your own blanket, bring your own chair, whatever you want to do. Very, very casual. We hope to see people in person this Saturday, weather permitting, obviously.
Please share your personal stories with us, whether it's about you, your grandchild, your friend's child. You know, we like to hear aspects and experiences from all kinds of people related to CHD, because I do think it helps. You can email us at nolahotz@gmail.com to reach out to do that. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Amazon Music, and Pandora.
You can also share our podcast if you're listening via Apple Podcasts, and you can rate and review us through Apple as well. We're looking forward to our next episode. Don't forget, no judgment here. It's all about survival. Cheers!